The dragon's scepter flew from the floor behind Rand, and he snagged it out of the air without looking. His eyes were not ice anymore, they were blue fire.
"A sea folk ambassador clinging to my heels?" he shouted. "Obey summonses?"
He shook the carved spearhead at them, the green and white tassel flailing.
"There are a people out there who want to conquer all of us and might be able to do it. The Forsaken are out there. The Dark One is waiting. Why didn't you agree I'd caulk their hulls while you were about it?"
Normally Min tried to soothe his temper when it flared, but this time she sat forward and glared at the Aes Sedai. She agreed with him fully. They had given away the barn to sell a horse. Rafaela actually swayed before that blast, but Mirana drew herself up, her own eyes managing a good imitation of brown fire flecked with gold.
"You castigate us?" she snapped in tones as frosty as her eyes were hot.
She was Aes Sedai as the child Min had seen them, regal above queens, powerful above powers.
"You were present in the beginning, Taviren, and you twisted them as you wanted them. You could have had them all kneeling to you, but you left. They were not pleased to know they had been dancing for a Taviren. Somewhere they learned to weave shields, and before you were well off their ship, Rafaela and I were shielded. So we could not take advantage with the power, they said. More than once, Harina threatened to hang us in the rigging by our toes until we came to our senses, and I for one believe she meant it. Feel lucky that you have the ships you want, Randall Thor. Harina would have given you a handful. Feel lucky she didn't want your new boots and that ghastly throne of yours as well. Oh, by the by, she formally acknowledged you as the Koromor. May you get a bellyache from it."
Min stared at her. Rand and Dobraine stared at her, and the Kyrianin's jaw hung open. Rafaela stared, her mouth working soundlessly. For that matter, the fire faded from Mirana's eyes, and they slowly grew wider and wider as if she were just hearing what she had said. The dragon's scepter trembled in Rand's fist. Min had seen his fury swell near to bursting for far less. She prayed for a way to avoid the explosion, and could not see one.
"It seems," he said finally, "that the words a Taviren drags out aren't always the words he wants to hear."
He sounded calm.
Min was not about to think sane. "You've done well, Mirana. I handed you a dog's dinner, but you and Rafaela have done well."
The two Aes Sedai swayed, and for a moment Min thought they might collapse in puddles on the floor from sheer relief. "At least we managed to keep the details from Cadswain," Rafaela said, smoothing her skirts unsteadily. "There was no way to stop everyone learning we had made some sort of agreement, but we kept that much from her."
"Yes," Mirana said breathlessly. "She even waylaid us on the way here. It's difficult keeping anything from her, but we did. We didn't think you'd want her to—"
She trailed off at the stony look on Rand's face. "Cadswain again," he said flatly.
He frowned at the carved length of spearhead in his hand, then tossed it onto a chair as if he did not trust himself with it.
"She's in the Sun Palace, is she? Min, tell the maidens outside to carry a message to Cadswain. She is to attend the Dragon Reborn in all haste."
"Rand, I don't think—" Min began uneasily, but Rand cut in, not harshly, but quite firmly.
"Do it, please, Min. This woman is like a wolf eyeing the sheepfold. I intend to find out what she wants."
Min took her time getting up and dragged her feet to the doors. She was not the only one to think this a bad idea, or at least to want to be elsewhere when the Dragon Reborn faced Cadswain Maladrin. Dobraine passed her on the way to the door, making a hasty bow with barely a pause, and even Mirana and Rafaela were out of the room before her, though they made it appear they were not hurrying. Inside the room they did, anyway. When Min put her head into the hallway, the two sisters had caught Dobraine and were scurrying along at little short of a trot. Strangely, the half-dozen maidens who had been outside when Min entered earlier had now grown in number until they lined the corridor as far as she could see in both directions. Tall, hard-faced women in the greys and browns and greys of the Cadinsor, shufa wrapped around their heads with the long black veil hanging down. A good many carried their spears and bull-hide bucklers as if they expected a battle. Some were playing a finger game called knife-paper-stone, and the rest were watching intently. not so intently that they did not see her, though. When she passed Rand's message, Handtalk flashed up and down the rows. Then two lanky maidens went trotting off. The others promptly returned to the game, playing or watching. Scratching her head in puzzlement, Min went back in. The maidens often made her nervous, yet they always had a word for her, sometimes respectful, as to a wise one, sometimes joking, though their humor was odd, to say the least. Never had they ignored her like this. Rand was in the bedchamber. That simple fact set her heart racing. He had his coat off, his snowy shirt unlaced at neck and cuffs, and pulled out of his breeches. Sitting on the foot of the bed, she leaned back against one of the heavy blackwood bedposts and swung her feet up, crossing her ankles. She had not had a chance to watch Rand undress himself, and she intended to enjoy it. Instead of continuing, though, he stood there looking at her. "What can Cadswain possibly teach me?" he asked suddenly. "You and all the Ashaman," she replied. That had been her viewing. "I don't know what, Rand. I only know you have to learn it. All of you do." It did not seem he intended to progress beyond letting his shirt hang down. Sighing, she went on. "You need her, Rand. You can't afford to make her angry. You can't afford to chase her away." Actually, she did not think 50 Murdrals and 1,000 Trollocs could chase Cadswain anywhere, but the point was the same. A far-off look came into Rand's eyes, and after a moment he shook his head. "Why should I listen to a madman?" he muttered almost under his breath. Light! Did he really believe Luz Theron Telamon spoke in his head? "Let someone know you need them, Min, and they have a hold on you. A leash to pull you where they want. I won't put a halter on my own neck for any Aes Sedai. Not for anyone." Slowly his fists unclenched. "You I need, Min," he said simply. "Not for your viewings. I just need you." Burn her, but the man could sweep her feet out from under her with a few words. With a smile as eager as hers, he grasped the bottom of his shirt with both hands and bent to begin hauling it over his head. Lacing her fingers over her stomach, she settled back to watch. The three maidens who marched into the room no longer wore the shufa that had concealed their short hair in the corridor. They were empty-handed, and no longer wore those heavy-blade belt-knives either. That was all Min had time to notice. Rand's head and arms were still inside the shirt, and Somara, flaxen-haired and tall even for an Aiel woman, seized the white linen and tangled it, trapping him. Almost in the same movement, she kicked him between the legs. With a strangled groan, he bent further, staggering. Nasser, fiery-haired and beautiful, despite white scars on both sun-dark cheeks, planted a fist in his right side, hard enough to make him stumble sideways. With a cry, Min launched herself from the bed. She did not know what madness was happening here, and could not even begin to guess. One of her knives came smoothly from each sleeve, and she threw herself at the maidens, shouting, "Help! Oh, Rand! Somebody help!" At least, that was what she tried to shout. The third maiden, Nandera, turned like a snake, and Min found a foot planted in her stomach. Breath rushed out of her in a wheeze. Her knives flew from numb hands, and she turned a somersault over the graying maiden's foot, landing on her back with a crash that drove out what little air remained in her. Trying to move, trying to breathe, trying to understand, all she could do was lie there and watch. The three women were quite thorough. Nasser and Nandera pounded Rand with their fists, while Somara held him bent over and caught in his own shirt. Again and again and again they drove studied blows into Rand's hard belly, into his right side. Min would have laughed hysterically had she had any breath. They were trying to beat him to death, and they very carefully avoided hitting anywhere near the tender round scar in his left side, with the half-healed slash running through it. She knew very well how hard Rand's body was, how strong, but no one could stand up to that. Slowly his knees folded, and when they thumped to the floor tiles, Nandera and Nasser stood back. Each nodded, and Somara released her hold on Rand's shirt. He fell forward on his face. She could hear him gasping, fighting groans that bubbled up despite his efforts. Kneeling, Somara pulled his shirt down almost tenderly. He lay there with his cheek on the floor,
eyes bulging, struggling for breath. Nasser bent to catch a fistful of his hair and jerk his head up. "We won the right for this," she growled. "But every maiden wanted to lay her hands on you. I left my clan for you, Randall Thor. I will not have you spit on me."
Somara moved a hand as if to smooth hair out of his face, then snatched it back.
"This is how we treat a first brother who dishonors us, Randall Thor," she said firmly. "The first time. The next, we will use straps."
Nandera stood over Rand with fist planted on her hips and a face of stone.
"You carry the honor of Far Darai's Mai, son of a maiden," she said grimly. "You promised to call us to dance the spears for you, and then you ran to battle and left us behind. You will not do this again."
She stepped over him to stride out, and the other two followed. Only Somara glanced back, and if sympathy touched her blue eyes, there was none in her voice when she said, "Do not make this necessary again, son of a maiden." Rand had pushed himself up to hands and knees by the time Min managed to crawl to him.
"They must be mad," she croaked. "Light, but her middle hurt. Ruark will..."
She did not know what Ruark would do. Not enough, whatever it was.
"Sorelia..."
Sorelia would stake them out in the sun, to start.
"When we tell her..."
"We tell no one," he said.
He almost sounded as if he had his breath back, although he was still slightly pop-eyed. How could he do that?
"They have the right. They've earned the right."
Min recognized that tone much too well. When a man decided to be stubborn, he would sit bare in a nettle patch and deny to your face that they made his bottom sting. She was almost pleased to hear him groan as she helped him to his feet. Well, as they helped each other. If he was going to be a pure wool-headed idiot, he deserved a few bruises. He eased himself onto the bed, lying back on the heaped pillows, and she snuggled in beside him. Not what she'd been hoping for, but as much as was going to happen, she was sure.
"Not what I was hoping to use this bed for," he muttered.
She was not sure she had been supposed to hear. She laughed. "I enjoy your holding me just as much as the other." Strangely, he smiled at her as if he knew she was lying. Her Aunt Mirren claimed that was one of the three lies any man would believe from a woman. "If I am interrupting," a woman's cool voice said from the doorway, "I suppose I could return when it is more convenient." Min jerked away from Rand as though burned, but when he pulled her back, she settled against him again. She recognized the Aes Sedai standing in the doorway, a plump little Kyrianin with four thin stripes of color across her full bosom and white slashes in her dark skirts. Daigyan Mosanailan was one of the sisters who had come with Cadswain, and she was almost as overbearing as Cadswain herself, in Min's opinion.
"Who might you be when you're at home?" Rand said lazily. "Whoever you are, didn't anyone ever teach you to knock?"
Min realized that every muscle in the arm holding her was hard as a rock, though. The moonstone dangling onto Daigyan's forehead on a thin silver chain swung as she slowly shook her head. Plainly, she was not pleased. "Cadswain Sedai received your request," she said, even more coolly than before, "and asked me to convey her regrets. She very much wishes to finish the piece of needlepoint she is working on. Perhaps she might be able to see you another day, if she can find time."
"Is that what she said?"
Rand asked dangerously. Daigyan sniffed disdainfully. "I will leave you to resume whatever you were doing."
Min wondered whether she could get away with slapping an Aes Sedai.
Daigyan eyed her frostily as if hearing the thought, and turned to glide from the room.
Rand sat up with a muffled oath.
"You tell Cadswain she can go to the pit of doom," he shouted after the retreating sister. "Tell her she can rot."
"It won't do, Rand," Min sighed. This was going to be harder than she had thought. "You need Cadswain. She doesn't need you."
"Doesn't she?"
he said softly, and she shivered. She had only thought his voice was dangerous before.
Rand prepared carefully, dressing in the green coat again, sending Min with messages for the maidens to carry. At least they would still do that. His ribs ached almost as much on his right side as the wounds did on his left, and his belly felt as if he had been beaten with a board. He had promised them. He seized hold of Saeedine, alone in his bedchamber, unwilling to let even Min see him falter again. He could keep her safe, at least, somehow, but how could she feel safe if she saw him about to fall over? He had to be strong for her sake. He had to be strong for the world. That bundle of emotions in the back of his head that was Alana reminded him of the cost of carelessness. Right then, Alana was sulking. She must have pushed a wise one too far, because if she was sitting, she was sitting gingerly.
"I still think this is lunacy, Randall Thor," Min said as he placed the crown of swords carefully on his head.
He did not want those tiny blades to draw blood again now.
"Are you listening to me? Well, if you intend to go through with it, I'm going with you. You admitted you need me, and you'll need me more than ever for this."
She was in full fig, fists on her hips, foot tapping, eyes all but glowing. "You're staying here," he told her firmly. He was still not sure what he intended to do, not fully, and he did not want her to see him stumble. He was very afraid he might stumble. He expected an argument, though. She frowned at him, and her foot stopped tapping. The angry light in her eyes faded into worry that vanished in a twinkling.
"Well, I suppose you're old enough to cross the stable-yard without your hand held, sheepherder. Besides, I am falling behind in my reading."
Dropping into one of the tall gilded chairs, she folded her legs beneath her and picked up the book she had been reading when he came in. In moments, she seemed totally engrossed in the page before her. Rand nodded. That was what he wanted. Her here and safe. Still, she did not have to forget him so completely. There were six maidens squatting in the hallway outside his door. They stared at him flat-eyed, not speaking. Nandera's gaze the flattest of all. Though Samara and Nasser came close. He thought Nasser was Shido. He would have to keep a hard eye on her. The Ashaman were waiting, too. Luz Theron muttered darkly of killing in Rand's head. All but Narishma, with the dragon on their collars as well as the sword. Curtly, he ordered Narishma to stand guard in his apartments, and the man saluted sharply, those dark, too-big eyes seeing too much, faintly accusing. Rand did not think the maidens would take out their displeasure on Min, but he was not taking any chances. Light, he had told Narishma everything about the traps he had woven in the stone when he sent the man to fetch Kalimdor. The man was imagining things. Burn him, that had been a mad risk to take.
"Only madmen never trust."
Luz Theron sounded amused, and quite mad. The wounds in Rand's side throbbed. They seemed to resonate with each other in distant pain. "Show me where to find Cadswain," he commanded. Nandera rose smoothly to her feet and started off without a backward glance. He followed, and the others fell in behind him, Dashiva and Flynn, Moore and Hopwell. He gave them hasty instructions as they walked. Flynn, of all people, tried to protest, but Rand bore him down. There was no time for quailing. The grizzled one-time guardsman was the last Rand had expected it of. Moore or Hopwell, perhaps, if no longer exactly dewy-eyed, they were still young enough to leave their razors dry as many days as wet. But not Flynn. Nandera's soft boots made no sound. Their footsteps reverberated from the high, square-vaulted ceiling, chasing away everyone with the shadow of a reason for fear. His wounds pulsed. Every last person in the Sun Palace knew the Dragon Reborn on sight by now, and they knew who the black-coated men were, too. Black-liveried servants made deep bows or curtsies and hurried to get out of his sight. Most nobles were almost as quick to put distance between themselves and five men who could channel, going somewhere with purpose on their faces. Ailill watched them pass with an unreadable expression. Annihila simpered, of course, but when Rand glanced back, she was staring after him with a face to match Nandera's. Bertome smiled as he made his leg, a dark smile, with neither mirth nor pleasure in it. Nandera did not speak even when they reached their destination, merely pointed to a closed door with one of her spears, turned on her heel, and strode back the way they had come. The Kara Karn, without a single maiden to guard him. Did they think four Ashaman enough to keep him safe? or was her departure another sign of displeasure? "Do what I told you," Rand said. Dashiva gave a jerk as if coming back to himself, then seized the source. The wide door, carved in vertical lines, swung open with a bang on a flow of air. The other three took hold of Sidene and followed Dashiva in, faces grim. "The Dragon Reborn," Dashiva's voice sounded loud, magnified slightly by the power. "The King of Ilion, the Lord of the Morning, comes to see the woman Cadswain Maladrin." Rand stepped in, standing tall. He did not recognize the other weave Dashiva had created, but the air seemed to hum with menace, a sense of something inexorable approaching, drawing ever nearer. "I sent for you, Cadswain," Rand said. He did not use weaves. His voice was hard and flat enough without aid. The green sister he remembered sat beside a small table with an embroidery hoop in her hands, an opened basket on the polished tabletop spilling out skeins of bright thread from some of its many compartments. She was exactly as he remembered. That strong face, topped by an iron-gray bun decorated with small dangling golden fish and birds, stars and moons. Those dark eyes, seeming almost black in her fair face. Cool, considering eyes. Luce Theron gave a wail and fled at the sight of her. "Well," she said, setting the embroidery hoop on the table, "I must say I've seen better without paying. With all I've been hearing about you, boy, the least I expected was peals of thunder, trumpets in the heavens, flashing lights in the sky." Calmly she regarded the five stone-faced men who could channel, which should have been enough to make any Aes Sedai flinch. Calmly she regarded the dragon reborn. "I hope one of you is at least going to juggle," she said, "or eat fire. I've always enjoyed watching Gleeman eat fire." Flynn barked a laugh before catching himself, and even then raked a hand through his fringe of hair and seemed to be struggling with amusement. Moore and Hopwell exchanged looks both puzzled and more than a little outraged. Dashiva smiled unpleasantly, and the weave he was holding grew stronger until Rand felt as if he wanted to look over his shoulder to see what was rushing toward him. "It is enough that you know I am who I am," Rand told her. "Dashiva, all of you, wait outside." Dashiva opened his mouth as if to protest. That had not been part of Rand's instructions, but they were not going to overawe the woman, not this way. The man went, though, muttering to himself. Hopwell and Moore actually stepped out eagerly, with sidelong glances at Cadswain. Flynn was the only one to make a dignified withdrawal, in spite of his limp. And he still seemed amused. Rand channeled, and a heavy, leopard-carved chair floated into the air from its place by the wall, spinning end over end in somersaults before settling like a feather in front of Cadswain. At the same time, a heavy silver pitcher drifted up from a long, draped table across the room, making a loud ping as it was suddenly heated. Steam gushed from the top, and it tipped over, whirling round and round like a slow top, as a silver cup darted up to neatly catch the dark pouring. "Too hot, I think," Rand said, and the glassed casements leaped from the tall, narrow windows. Snowflakes billowed in on an icy blast, and the cup soared out through one of the windows, soared back again, straight to his hand as he sat himself. Let her see how calm she could stay with a madman staring at her. The dark liquid was tea, too strong after his boiling, and bitter enough to set his teeth on edge. But the warmth was just right. His skin pebbled in the gusts, howling into the room and flapping tapestries against the walls. But in the void, that was far away, someone else's skin. "The laurel crown is prettier than some," Cadswain said with a faint smile. Her hair ornaments swayed whenever the wind rose, and small wisps flailed about her bun, but the only notice she took was to catch her embroidery hoop just before it was blown from the table. "I prefer that name, but you can't expect me to be impressed by crowns. I've paddled the bottoms of 2 reigning kings and 3 queens. Not sitting rulers, you understand, once I was done with them. Not for a day or so, but it did get their attention. You can see why crowns don't impress me, though." Rand eased his jaw. Grinding his teeth would not help. He widened his eyes, hoping he looked insane instead of simply furious. "Most Aes Sedai avoid the Sun Palace," he told her, "except for those who have sworn fealty to me, and those I hold prisoner." Right. What was he to do with those? As long as the Wise Ones kept them out of his hair, all was well enough.
"The Aiel seem to think I should come and go as I please," she said absently, eyeing the hoop in her hand as if thinking of taking up her needle again. "A matter of some trifling help I gave some boy or other. Though why anyone but his mother should think him worth it, I can hardly say."
Rand made another effort not to grind his teeth. The woman had saved his life. Her and Damer Flynn between them, and plenty of others in the bargain, Min among them. But he still owed Cadswain something for that. Burn her. "I want you to be my advisor. I'm king of Ilion now, and kings have Aes Sedai advisors." She gave his crown a dismissive glance.
"Certainly not. An advisor has to stand and watch her charge make a muddle much too often to suit me. She also has to take orders, something I am particularly bad at. Won't someone else do? Alana, perhaps?"
Despite himself, Rand sat up straight. Did she know about the bond? Marana had said it was hard to keep anything from her. No. He could worry later about how much his faithful Aes Sedai were telling Cadswain. Light, he wished Min could be wrong for once, but he would believe himself breathing water first. He could not make himself tell her that he needed her. No halter. What if you didn't have to swear any oaths?
"I suppose that might work," she said doubtfully, peering at her cursed stitchery.
Her eyes rose to his, considering.
"You sound uneasy. I don't like to tell a man he's afraid, even when he has reason to be. Uneasy over a sister you haven't turned into a tame lapdog, snaring you in some fashion? Let me see. I can make you a few promises. Perhaps they will set your mind at rest. I expect you to listen, of course. Make me waste my breath, and you'll yelp for it. But I won't make you do what I want. I won't tolerate anyone lying to me, certainly. That's another thing you'll find decidedly uncomfortable. But I don't expect you to tell me the deepest yearnings of your heart, either. Oh, yes. Whatever I do, it will be for your own good. Not mine. Not the good of the White Tower. Yours. Now, does that ease your fears? Pardon me, your unease."
Wondering whether he was supposed to laugh, Rand stared at her. "Do they teach you how to do that?" he demanded. "Make a promise sound a threat, I mean."
"Oh, I see. You want rules.
Most boys do, whatever they say. Very well. Let me see. I cannot abide incivility. So you will be properly civil to me, to my friends, and my guests. That includes not channeling at them, in case you haven't guessed, and holding your temper, which I understand is memorable. It also takes in your companions in those black coats. A pity if I had to spank you for something one of them did. Does that suffice? I can make more if you need them." Rand set his cup down beside the chair. The tea had gone cold as well as bitter. Snow was beginning to pile up in drifts beneath the windows. "I'm the one who's supposed to go mad, Aes Sedai, but you already are." Rising, he strode for the door.
"I do hope you haven't tried to use Kalendor," she said complacently behind him. "I have heard it's vanished from the stone. You managed to escape once, but you might not twice."
He stopped short, looking over his shoulder. The woman was pushing that bloody needle through the cloth stretched on her hoop. The wind gusted, swirling snow around her, and she did not even lift her head.
"What do you mean, escape?"
"What?" She did not look up.
"Oh, very few even in the tower knew what Kalendor is before you drew it. But there are surprising things hidden in musty corners of the tower library.
I went rummaging some years ago, when I first had the suspicion you might be suckling at your mother's breast. Just before I decided to go back into retirement. Babes are messy things, and I could not see how to find you before you stopped dripping at one end or the other.
What do you mean?
He demanded roughly. Catswain looked up then, and with her hair flung about and snow settling on her dress, she looked a queen.
I told you I cannot abide incivility. If you ask for my help again, I expect you to ask politely. And I will expect an apology for your behavior today.
What do you mean about Kalandor?
It is flawed, she replied curtly, lacking the buffer that makes other Sangreal safe to use. And it apparently magnifies the taint, inducing wildness of the mind, so long as a man is using it anyway. The only safe way for you to use the sword that is not a sword, the only way to use it without the risk of killing yourself, or trying to do the light alone knows what insanity, is linked with two women, and one of them guiding the flows. Trying not to hunch his shoulders, he strode away from her. So it had not just been the wildness of Saidin around Ebu Dar that had killed Adlai. He had murdered the man the moment he sent Narishma for the thing. Cadswain's voice pursued him. Remember, boy, you must ask very nicely and apologize. I might even agree, if your apology sounds truly sincere.
Rand barely heard her. He had hoped to use Kalandor again, hoped it would be strong enough. Now only one chance remained, and it terrified him. He seemed to hear another woman's voice, a dead woman's voice.
You could challenge the Creator.
Chapter 28 Crimson Thorn. It hardly seemed the setting for the explosion Elaine feared. Harlan Bridge was a village of moderate size, with three inns and enough houses that no one had to sleep in a hayloft. When Elaine and Birgitta went downstairs to the common room that morning, Mistress Dill, the round innkeeper, smiled warmly and offered as much of a curtsy as her size allowed. It was not just that Elaine was Aes Sedai. Mistress Dill was so pleased that her inn was full, what with the roads snow-packed, that she bobbed at nearly everyone. At their entrance, Avienda hastily gulped the last of her breakfast bread and cheese, brushed a few crumbs from her green dress, and snatched up her dark cloak to join them. Outside, the sun was just peeking over the horizon, a low dome of pale yellow. Only a few clouds marred a beautiful blue sky, and they were white and fluffy, not the sort to carry snow. It seemed a wonderful day for traveling. Except that Adelais was trampling a path up the snowy street, and the white-haired sister was dragging one of the kin, Garinia Rosuinde, by her arm. Garinia was a slim-hipped Saldaean who had spent the last 20 years as a merchant, although she looked only a few years older than Nynaeve did. Normally her strongly hooked nose gave her a forceful appearance, a woman who would make hard trading and not back away. Now her dark tilted eyes were large in her face, and her wide mouth hung open, emitting a wordless wail. A growing knot of kinswomen followed behind, skirts held high out of the snow, whispering among themselves, with more running from every direction to join. Rihanna and the rest of the knitting circle were in the front, all grim-faced except for Kirstian, who seemed even paler than usual. Elise was there, too, wearing an utterly blank expression. Adelais stopped in front of Elaine and shoved Garinia so hard the woman fell to hands and knees in the snow, where she stayed, still wailing. The kinswomen gathered behind her, more of their number flocking in.
"I'm bringing this to you because Nynaeve is busy," the brown sister told Elaine. She meant that Nynaeve was enjoying a little time alone with Lan somewhere, but for once not so much as a hint of a smile crossed her lips.
"Be quiet, child," she snapped at Garinia, who promptly went silent.
Adelais gave a satisfied nod.
"This is not Garinia Rosuinde," she said. "I finally recognized her. Zarya Alcaesa,
a novice who ran away just before Van Deen and I decided to retire and write our history of the world. She admitted it when I confronted her. I'm surprised Kariana didn't recognize her before this. They were novices together for 2 years. The law is clear, Elaine. A runaway must be put back in white as soon as possible and kept under strict discipline until she can be returned to the tower for proper punishment. She won't think of running again after that. Elaine nodded slowly, trying to think of what to say. Whether or not Zarya thought of running again, she would not be allowed the opportunity. She was very strong in the power. The tower would not let her go if it took the rest of her life to earn the shawl. But Elaine was recalling something she had heard this woman say the first time she met her. The meaning had not registered then, but now it did. How would Zarya face novice white again after living as her own woman for 70 years? Worse, those whispers among the kinswomen had begun to sound like rumbles. She did not have long to think. Suddenly Kirstjan fell to her knees, clutching at Adelias's skirts with one hand. "I submit myself," she said calmly, her tone a wonder coming from that bloodless face. "I was enrolled in the novice book almost 300 years ago, and ran away less than a year later. I submit myself and beg mercy." It was white-haired Adelias's turn to go wide-eyed. Kirstjan was claiming to have run away from the White Tower when she herself was an infant, if not before she was born. Most of the sisters still did not really believe the ages claimed by the kin. Indeed, Kirstjan appeared just into her middle years. Even so, Adelias recovered herself quickly. However old the other woman was, Adelias had been Aes Sedai about as long as anyone living. She carried an aura of age and authority. "If that is so, child," her voice did falter just a bit at that, "I fear we must put you in white, too. You will still be punished, but surrendering as you have will gain you some mitigation." "That is why I did it." Kirstjan's steady tone was spoiled somewhat by a hard swallow. She was almost as strong as Zarya. None of the knitting circle were weak, and she would be held very closely. "I knew you would find me out, sooner or later." Adelias nodded as though that were clearly obvious, though how the woman would have been found out Elaine could not guess. She very much doubted that Kirstjan Chalwin was the name the woman had been born with. Most of the kin believed in Aes Sedai omniscience, though. They had, at least.
"Rubbish!" Serenia Vostovan's husky voice cut through the murmured babble of the kin.
Neither strong enough to become Aes Sedai nor nearly old enough to stand very high among the kin, she still stepped from the pack defiantly.
"Why should we give them up to the White Tower? We have helped women run away, and rightly so. It is not part of the rules to give them back." "Control yourself," Rihanna said sharply. "Alice, take Serenia in hand, please. It seems she forgets too many of the rules she claims to know."
Alice looked at Rihanna, her face still unreadable. Alice, who enforced the kin's rules with a firm hand. "It is not part of our rules to hand runaways back, Rihanna," she said. Rihanna jerked as though struck.
"And how do you suggest keeping them?" she demanded finally. "We have always held runaways apart until we were sure they were no longer hunted, and if they were found before, we let the sisters take them. That is the rule, Alice. What other rule do you propose violating? Do you suggest that we actually set ourselves against Aes Sedai?"
Ridicule of such a notion larded her voice, yet Alice stood looking at her, silent.
"Yes," a voice shouted from the crowd of kinswomen. "We are many, and they are few."
Adelias stared at the crowd in disbelief. Elaine embraced Sidar, though she knew the voice was right. The kin were too many. She felt Avienda embracing the power, and Birgitta setting herself. Giving herself a shake as if coming to, Elise did something far more practical, certainly far more effective.
"Serenia," she said loudly, "you will report to me when we stop tonight with a switch you cut yourself before we leave this morning. You too, Asra. I recognize your voice."
And then, just as loudly, she said to Rihanna,
"I will report myself for your judgment when we stop tonight. I don't see anyone getting ready."
The kinswomen broke up quickly then, heading off to gather their things, yet Elaine saw some of them talking quietly as they went. When they rode over the bridge across the frozen stream that wound down beside the village, with Nynaeve incredulous over what she had missed, and glaring about for someone to call down, Sarenya and Asra carried switches, as did Elise, and Zarya and Kirstjan wore hastily found white dresses beneath their dark cloaks. The windfinders pointed at them and laughed uproariously. But many of the kinswomen still talked in clusters, falling silent whenever a sister or one of the knitting circle looked at them. And there was a darkness to their eyes when they looked at Aes Sedai. 8 more days of floundering through the snow when it was not falling, and grinding her teeth in an inn when it was. 8 more days of brooding by the kin, of staring bleakly at the sisters, days of strutting by the windfinders around kin and Aes Sedai alike. On the morning of the 9th day, Elaine began to wish everyone had simply gone for everyone else's throat. She was just wondering whether they could cover the last 10 miles to Camelin without a murder, when Kirstjan rapped at her door and darted in without waiting for an answer. The woman's plain woolen dress was not the shade of white proper for a novice, and she had regained much of her dignity somehow, as if knowing her future had smoothed her present. But now she made a hasty curtsy, almost tripping over her cloak, and her nearly black eyes were anxious. "Nynaeve Sedai, Elaine Sedai, Lord Lan says you are to come at once," she said breathlessly. "He told me to speak to no one, and you aren't to either." Elaine and Nynaeve exchanged looks with Avienda and Birgitta. Nynaeve growled something under her breath about the man not knowing private from public, but it was clear before she blushed that she did not believe it. Elaine felt Birgitta focus, the drawn arrow hunting a target. Kirstjan did not know what Lan wanted, only where she was to lead them. The small hut outside of Cullen's Crossing, where Adelais had taken Ispan the night before. Lan stood outside, his eyes as cold as the air, and would not let Kirstjan enter. When Elaine went inside, she saw why. Adelais lay on her side beside an overturned stool, a cup on the rough wooden floor not far from one outstretched hand. Her eyes stared, and a pool of congealed blood spread out from the deep slash across her throat. Ispan lay on a small cot, staring at the ceiling. Lips drawn back in a rictus bared her teeth, and her bulging eyes seemed full of horror, as well they might have, since a wrist-thick wooden stake stood out from between her breasts. The hammer that had plainly been used to drive it in lay beside the cot, on the edge of a dark stain that ran back under the cot. Elaine forced herself to stop thinking about emptying her stomach on the spot. "Light," she breathed. "Light! Who could do this? How could anyone do this?" Avienda shook her head wonderingly, and Lan did not even bother with that. He just watched 9 directions at once, as though he expected whoever or whatever had committed this murder to come through one of the 2 tiny windows, if not through the walls. Birgitta drew her belt knife, and by her face she dearly wished she had her bow. That drawn arrow was stronger than ever in Elaine's head. At first, Nynaeve simply stood in one spot, studying the hut's interior.